Right. Good afternoon, everyone. So thank you for being here at lunchtime. It's one of the most tiring time to have a session, and having it in there listening to it would be starving probably. A couple of things that I found when I came to Las Vegas is that in the casino area, especially, you would not find a single watch or a clock, I would say. And another thing is they pour out so much oxygen, it kind of gets you active in a lot of ways. So I'm going to try to keep humble, and so that when I see a lot of activeness or a lot of concentration in this room, I would think that that's the oxygen really pumping into this area, right? Yeah, and I'll try to keep myself alive as well. Yep, so right today, the session is about inside Windows Server 2012 deployment and multi-server management capabilities. It's probably the longest session name I have delivered till now. And it does involve so many different aspects, and the words, terms are pretty much big, like deployment. We can talk about so many things on deployment, and multi-server management. We can also talk about so many things in here. So I like to set the expectation to the right level. What I would be talking about today is mainly what Windows Server 2012 provides, right? So I'm going to talk about Windows Server 2012's the best practices on how you could deploy and how you can automate through PowerShell. And so it's basically going to be about Server 2012. But I want you to know that this is about Server 2012 as a management server, right? As a management point, I would say. The destination or the target that you would be able to manage, it's a different story, and you can totally adapt what I would be saying today to other areas, to other non-Windows systems, I would say. Right, so having said that, I'd like to briefly just go through about what I would be talking about. The first thing would be standard-based management. Now, has anyone tried to use PowerShell's standard-based management capabilities to manage non-Windows? Is there anybody who actually tried to do that? I don't think so. I've searched the web a lot and just try to get the feeling of where people were at. I kind of have the feeling that this has not been out there and talked about that much on how we can actually do that and what the underlying story is behind that. So you can actually see a good direction of where we are trying to go with this on management space. And with that saying, on top of the standard-based management capabilities, you can actually adapt that with the robust automation and simple and easy to use Windows PowerShell version 3. Is there people who actually went to the instructor-led lab that I've delivered on PowerShell? All right. Great to see you again. Right. So we have a couple of good PowerShell labs out there. It's also in self-paced lab. But it kind of gives you a granular view of what PowerShell really can do. So if you guys were the people who've been using PowerShell version 1 and 2, I encourage you to go figure out and find out what version 3 can do, because it had massive improvements on it. And also, those people who are really good with System Center, now PowerShell could be something that actually can add to your value in a very big way. For example, like I'm not such a big fan of football, but I kind of play video games sometimes on football games. And when I create a player with great like throwing ability and like throwing speed and some things like and accuracy, it will make me a $10 million salary guy, right? But if I add the speed, the agile quarterback, it's going to make me to a $100 million salary guy, right? It's not going to double. It's just going to go 10 times better player. So for those people who are really used to System Center, excuse me, having known the PowerShell, it's going to get you a lot more powerful, because a lot of system center components that you are using today is going to have the capability of adopting that PowerShell. For example, the keynote that you have seen on Monday, bursting that application, multi-tiered application into Azure space, that's all been determined through PowerShell. So if we really want to manage specifically on the environment that you are using, which is going to be really unique, that's going to be the space that PowerShell really comes in handy for. So I'm going to talk about that and how that has improved. And there's also Windows Server's Server Manager that had been improved. And I'm just going to walk you through on how that has been improved and what the underlying technology is a little bit. And lastly, I'd like to talk about the model of Windows Server, how that can be deployed in MiniShell or with UI or in Server Core, and the method of doing that through Windows Deployment Services. So I do have a couple of demos with me, so please try to stay alive here. I'd like to start off that Windows Server was a decent operating system when it comes to management in a single server space. This was before Server 2012, right? So whenever you had a problem or an issue, or if you want to check out the performance and events, compared to other operating systems, it was a good operating system to actually get inside to a single box and manage that. But since you guys are having so many servers for you to work with, and also a lot of people are virtualizing that operating system, right? And which means that for an IT admin point of view, you have another layer to manage, as well as you're going to burst to a number of servers that you have to manage, right? So that's the challenges that you are facing today. And even what's more is that when it comes to cloud story, when you have the push from the business point of view that you have to go to cloud, it becomes another story in management point of view. So on Server 2012, we tried to really focus not just on the virtualization stack, but also we invested heavily, and I really mean it, heavily invested on management stack. So in order to do that, we had the challenge to manage that Windows Server multiple scale, which that needs to be automated, not just on the physical on-prem, but off-prem, whether that is virtualized or in physical, and having done that in a very automated path, kind of a way. So Server 2012 has been really investing on that point of view. And the other thing is that people try to manage multiple servers, multiple objects, not just on the operating system layer, which I've just described, you need to manage the virtualization layer, but also if it comes down to hardware level, you need to know whether if your disk is running out of space and whether if that the storage is really coming into space, and you really want to separate this LUNs, and you need to do so many things from that level point of view. And so if people are trying to manage objects with a lot of different objectives, right? So people does have a lot of reasons to manage different things, and it becomes so much complex. What I mean is that people in so much different layers, they want to manage that with different objectives. They need that solution and management applications to do that. And they have a lot of vendors providing that management stack, so they have to really learn that, and that's going to be really complicated for you to manage. So what we try to do is we come up with a Windows Management Framework 3.0. I'm not sure if you guys have heard about WMF 3.0. is that for the first time, we really try to embrace the standard-based model within our management framework. So what this really means is that we do not try to come up with a new standard model. We actually try to embrace what's out there already in the field. And we had some really good relationship with the DMTFs who actually make those standards. And we really try to come up with the model that actually embraces that. And this is, for example, the common information model that the DMTF provide, we actually have that in Windows Management Framework. And, for example, if you develop that common information model a little bit more, extend for storage-wise, then that's what you call SMIS, right? It's totally on SIM-based model. So think about that standard model that you have on whichever the hardware is, or even other operating systems such as Linux and Unix does have that model already inside of them. So we have that channel, and we understand the model of how we can communicate, and we can change data from it in a management point of view. So that's what we try to embrace here. And not just on the management model layer, we need to know how to talk to that model, right? So we need that protocol to talk with. And so having said that, we also implemented the standard protocol for it, which is something like HTTP, which is worldwide known protocol, right? And WSMAN, Web Service Management, which is also a protocol. And we have PowerShell Remote Protocol, which we embrace to use it as a protocol space. So we do talk to that model with the standardized protocol, so you won't need anything additionally implemented for that talking space. And we do have that standard API, like OData or PowerShell, for you to really implement your application to talk with to that standard model. So it's basically we're trying to really try to do management in a heterogeneous environment, which normally almost all organizations have. They're not just using Windows. They're not just using a Linux or Unix. They have a heterogeneous environment to manage, and not just on OS level, hypervisor, as well as some storage and other network layers and the device layers. So we're trying to have that as a common framework for you to manage, right? Yeah, so Windows Management Framework, when you download Windows Management Framework 3.0, and if you install that on Windows, it goes down level to Windows Server 2008. Then it gives you the capabilities to talk with other non-Windows systems in standard point of view. Right, so what does this really mean? Common information model, you're going to hear this a lot in the future. And at Microsoft, and this is not a Microsoft thing. This is a standard model for in the management space. It's an object-oriented data model, and it allows you to talk in a common standardized way. So this actually involves a Linux, Unix operating system, whereas some like network devices and middleware services and storage. So it's a really common information model for you to manage. And this will allow a lot more in the future that you will have a lower cost in managing because you would be not needing so many different management applications to do that. And so there is a way to manage in REST API and OData as in standard API space. So you will have that connectivity there. And at the end of the day, what this can really do is when we say about management, multi-machine management, whatever it is that we talk about, it's not just going to be about Windows, right? So we really try to embrace that standardized-based model and try to manage it to non-Windows, whereas with Windows on correlating on the heterogeneous environment. So I'm going to show you a very quick demo on it. So I do have a host machine here that has CentOS and CentOS 2. And this is just a side note that us as a hypervisor, we do provide CentOS and SUSE and Red Hat Linux to have Hyper-V enabled just out of the box for Linux and CentOS boxes. And how this actually works is that we do deliver the code to those open source for Linux guys and for Linux distros that after they have compiled it, it will automatically notice Windows Server Hyper-V. So you would not have to install another additional Hyper-V enabled agents like integrated services from now on. And I do believe that what we have today on CentOS, it's already enabled. So it will just run just like Windows as it is right now. So I'm just going to run ifconfig and say, hey, this is the machine that has IPS as this, 1.94 is probably those things that you might want to remember for this demo. And the host name is CentOS 01. So it is a Linux box, right? And I'm going to connect to another Windows server, which I'm going to show you that it can actually retrieve information from that Linux box, which is pretty much huge. And I'll say that this is a PowerShell IIC, and I'm going to make a new sim session, which is common information modeled enable session. I'm going to run this here, all right, and I'm going to insert the password for it, the credential information. I hope I can type here. And then I go there. Now the sim session has been created. So now I have the channel to talk with that CentOS machine I have there. And I'm going to run here. So what this really does is I'm going to talk with that Linux box, and I have retrieved the instrumental information from it. So I'm going to see what they actually consist of. And then if I hit this, it's actually going to get a lot of information from that Linux box. So you can say that, okay, I can't scroll up. So what this really means is that it actually gets the information that I want with a simple creating a session and having that talk to that Linux box with simple credential information. So you will be able to have these kind of information reproduced for your own management sakes, right? So it's really powerful. What you can extend to do is that you can actually control the services, and you can actually monitor performance and get the log data and have that reconfigured or have that into a set of another log files and have that reproduced for reporting-wise. And you can do that in otherwise. For example, if you go to the Linux box and have the sim session that I have created here and have deployed Windows roles or features, or some things like that, actionable things, you can do that in the Windows boxes as well. So it's a pretty powerful thing that you can do with the standard-based model, with the common information model being implemented. Let me just get back. All right. So having said that, Windows, like PowerShell 3.0, has become such a powerful tool for those IT pros or IT admins to manage the Windows server, because we're, at the end of the day, dealing with a very complex world with different things to do with different machines, right? So we need to really know how to scale that in coverage-wise and how to robust automation with that. And PowerShell version 3.0 has been really dramatically increased on those kind of capabilities. Right. So the investment themes that we have gone through on PowerShell 3 is, for those people who are not familiar with version 2, or PowerShell or even scripting, you will be able to learn easily with PowerShell version 3. We have this updating help command list built in it, so it will be really easy for you to figure out how to use that command list. But also you will have that PowerShell integrated scripting environment for you to use. I'm pretty sure that you have clicked on it and see how that actually pops up. So that's going to be some things that you will be using. If you start really using it, it's going to be really comfortable for you to use. And another thing is we have comprehensive coverage, right? So before PowerShell 3, we had like 200 plus commandlets for you to use. So we did have this Exchange command list. We did have Active Directory command list, but it went to deeper as what Windows actually provided, such as like DNS or specific instruments on domain controller-wise. We did not have the coverage to handle all those different actionable tasks. But on version 3, we had like 2,400 command lists shipped with Server 2012. So it's gone pretty huge on that. And we do have that robust and scalability feature. So we have a workflow and back scheduled job that can be run on background. So those are those things that you can actually make in order for you to use in a daily task and probably have it use it on a weekly basis, right? So those are just a couple of things that I just wanted to tiptoe on and highlight on it just before I went along, because PowerShell version 3 is a kind of a powerful tool for you to use. Right, so this is the some of the things that has been really improved on is the syntax So if you are pretty much used to PowerShell version 2, you would see that the how we handle those variables and all those little things has been massively improved as well. So it'll be easy for you to really look at the strings, which you would be seeing in the later demo, that the string itself is really like kind of a real language, so you wouldn't have any trouble reading that, and that has been improved massively as well, right? So I just wanted to highlight some of it here, and the jobs that we have improved here. This is going to come in really handy for you to use, especially when it comes to multi-machine management here. So the jobs that we provide here in PowerShell version 3 is going to actually let you run, suspend, stop, and have all those different switch commands within built in it. So it's going to have a really a functional way for you to automate it in your daily tasks. So those, I'm not going to like go all through this, but I do want to highlight some of those things that we had, which is scheduled jobs. Is there anybody who actually use scheduled jobs on your daily or weekly basis on your tasks that you run? All right, awesome. Many of you. All right, great. Yeah, this is pretty powerful because it reduces a bunch of your time, a lot of your time. And what it really does is it kind of really talks with the Windows scheduling in a Windows operating system level. So if the job is there, you can actually see what kind of jobs are scheduled or planned to be used. And this is like you can work it on a weekly basis, daily basis, at a time basis, whatever it is that you want to run in. But it actually can stop or you want to retrieve some result from it and have that built in. For example, if you want to like gather logs or performance data from a certain machines, for example, from Exchange machines, and you want to really see the trends of it, we do have operation management system. But if you want to trigger that in a process level, you can actually use this as well. So you can actually have that as in a log base and have that really tuned in and run it in your task base as a scheduled job. So this is going to be super easy for you to do. And if you implement that in operations manager within the task, it's also going to report to you back in an instant with the reporting services that's built in on operation manager, right? And also, we have a robust session connectivity. This comes very, very handy when you try to take some actions within your environment, but you do want to have this run whenever there's a network connection that has disconnected. You still do want to have that server run on this probably scheduled job, but probably a background job, but sometimes it's going to be a long running workflow that you want to execute. But once it gets disconnected, you wouldn't need to really worry about it. So if you are like out of your daily hours and you went out, but you need to run some kind of a task, including like reboots, and when there's a problem with patching, you really want to go into PowerShell and really log that out and see what's going on. But let's say you are out there that has not such a good connectivity, right? But if you connect that to a session base, and if you do that to multiple servers in a single like new sim session, and something that I showed you with Linux boxes as well, you can do that in a multiple simultaneous way and see and actually have that keep on going even though that session has been disconnected. So it does have that automated way for robust session connectivity so that you will still have that connected to run any kind of commands, even though with low bandwidth and disconnected network sessions and things like that. But you might want to wonder about security issues. It does get disconnected after 4 minutes, so it does have that default way of having that failure and disconnected session-wise. Right. So I also wanted to point out some PowerShell web access. This is a very strong feature. We do have the instructor-led lab, so I would not want to show it here, but on PowerShell Web Access, it's a point where you're outside of your daily work, right? And you're going to connect to the internet, and there's going to be a Windows PowerShell Web Access gateway server that you have implemented it with, right? So if you connect to that server, it's going to connect through HTTPS. So it's going to be a secure channel, And after you having the logged into that gateway, you can actually assign which computer you want to log in at to the PowerShell level, right? So let's say you have a Windows PowerShell web access on Gateway 01 server, which is on the DMZ or a perimeter network space, I would say. You do not necessarily have to have domain controls or any of your mission critical service inside have to be exposed outside beyond the gateway. You can actually hit the gateway and have that access point so that you will have your internal systems having been accessed with PowerShell command list. So you can actually access all these things with PowerShell web access. So with that, I'd like to invite Michael Green to up the stage and talk about how easy and useful it is for you to really manage with PowerShell.
Great.
Command list, right?
I'm live. Awesome. So just to level set before I get started, how many of you would consider yourselves PowerShell geeks? Got a handful. Awesome. My goal right now is going to be to inspire everybody in the room to become PowerShell geeks, so much so that I hope on the way home, just sitting on the airplane, you fire up PowerShell and start tinkering. I've been an admin, a consultant, an engineer, a PM, technical sales, you name it, and the thing that has made me enjoy those roles is I like to tinker. That's what got me started with PowerShell. At some point, everybody here has written a batch file, right? And it wasn't because you're a developer. It's because you understand how to write in some, you know, some basic command lines, and you decided it'd be nice to have these things run two or three at a time in sequence. I can kick off that batch file. It does it for me. This is not that big of a difference to that. I think the number one thing that I hear when I talk to people about PowerShell is, well, I'm not, you know, I hear about PowerShell. I just haven't really had time to sit down and play with it yet, but I really want to. I just haven't gotten there yet. You know, I'm not a developer, so it's not really my thing. So let's just play around with it a little bit, and how do I switch back over here? Just drop me out of my session there. That'll work. Let's get just a raw session going. So I was talking to somebody about this yesterday, and I decided I jumped in way too deep initially when I started talking to him, because I was talking about all the funny things I do with PowerShell. If there's such a thing as having a problem with using PowerShell too much, I have that problem. We have a touchscreen desktop that sits in our living room. We have real-time pricing with our power company. So I've got a PowerShell script as a scheduled task that goes out and scrapes their website looking for the real-time power price. And if it drops above 8 cents per kilowatt hour, a window pops up to tell my wife it's not a good time to using big appliances right now. And she thinks I have a problem, and I think she's probably right. So I'll crescendo by showing another module that's kind of like that at the end of this. But I just, again, wanted to show you just, you know, kind of how to start tinkering around with this. The first thing is self-discovery is basically built into PowerShell, right? So if you're ever not sure exactly where to get started, you can do get-command and see what's there. The point of me showing you that is if you're sitting on an airplane and you didn't want to pay for the internet connection, you can actually hit get-command and go see what's there, right? Because although, you know, we're only limited by the boundary of our imagination in something like this, sometimes our imagination doesn't, you know, stretch out very far if we're tired on the plane ride home. You've always got Bing to go see what other people are doing, but this is a way that you can discover those commands right there. You've also got autocomplete. So whenever I was talking to somebody yesterday about this, we were just talking about PowerShell, and the first thing that came up was, you know, I've actually got a project in mind for something like that. Can I get at the event log with PowerShell and pull information out of there? You know, it'd be really nice if I could just go look at who are the last 20 people who log on to this server and not spend a lot of time on that instead of going out and crawling the event log every time. I said, absolutely, we can do that. So let's just see what that would look like. If I do get, everything starts with a verb in PowerShell, dash, and I start typing events, if I just want to figure out what it looks like, if I keep hitting tab, I get to get-event log. So it was easy to find get-event log. That's the source of data that I'm looking for. There's also parameters. So just like if you were running setup.exe and you were throwing it different parameters for a silent install, the concept around commandlets in PowerShell is they have parameters that you can provide additional information. If you hit dash and start hitting tab again, you'll find what those parameters are. You can also do a get-help and throw it that commandlet. That'll help you, you know, just see what's on the screen, what those parameters are. But we know it's log name security. That's what we're looking for. And I'm going to do a select last 20. And the essence of discovery, if I was trying to figure out what to do from here, I just want to see what these look like. I can go out, connect to my security event log, get the last 20 events. So they're all right there. Now that by itself isn't going to help me a whole lot. And I will confess that I put a little time into this before we got started today and figured out what this would look like. So I'm going to shortcut this process, and I'm just going to go to another awesome thing you can do with PowerShell. If you just ran that and you say, I'm going to do that again, but a little bit different, hit the up arrow, and it'll bring back that last command. So this is going to look a little bit more developer-ish. That's okay. You're going to get through it. We're going to do a where, which is basically a filter, right? So I'm going to look for where event ID is 4624, which is a successful login, and I'm also going to filter out system logons because I just want to see users, right? So I'm going to say question mark for where, $ underscore is what came out of that first part before the pipe, event ID equals 4624, and still looking at that same thing that's coming across the pipe. Now this is going to look a bit funny, and I'm going to show you how I figured this out. The thing I'm looking for is replacement strings. I'm looking for the fifth one. Oop, I want not equals, so any. System in all caps. And once again, I'm going to select, this time let's just look at the last five so it runs a little quicker.
Could you actually write that to a file as well?
I forgot a bracket.
Oh, okay.
Yes, absolutely. So if you wanted this to export to a CSV, you would do that by running the commandlet export to dash, or was it export to dash CSV.
And of course, you can do this in a scheduled way, right?
Absolutely. So where you were talking about scheduled tasks, you can run PowerShell scripts as scheduled tasks. You can actually create the scheduled task using PowerShell. So you can see here I've got these. Here's what I do whenever I'm tinkering. I almost always use $test. When I put that $ in front of the word, it just means I'm making it a variable. I didn't have to declare it in advance, anything like that. Now I'm getting a little bit developer-y, right? I'm actually working with variables and things like that. All I'm doing is saying the stuff that came out of that line, just store it. Keep it around so I can start to modify it. These square brackets means that I can call each of those one at a time. Still not terribly helpful. If only I knew more about what the output looks like. So I did a get member. Now don't get too scared here. Methods is just stuff you can do with that item. Property is more information about that item, right? You can also just do this by putting a dot on the end and starting hitting tab to see, and it's going through that same list to see what I've got here. So if I do that and I get to message, sorry, I need to put my zero on the end. There's that full event log description. The reason I used replacement strings, and I'll show you what that looks like, is whenever I did that get member and I was looking at what's available to me and I looked at message and said, holy cow, that's a lot more information than I really wanted if I was going to try to script this. I said, what's replacement strings? Helps if I type it correctly. Turns out that's just the data for that event log. So there I've got basically a list of those properties. So now I'm looking at that event log. I can see that that user who was the very last, the fifth back person to log in, logged in as, let's see here, it would be 012, RD01. I think that's, that'd be the machine name. So we also want to filter out those machine names and things like that. You start to see the idea, though, where you might want to filter by the SID. You might want to filter by logon type. You can get all kinds of information about this. Now, the kind of the gist of this session is remote administration. So what would that look like? Well, you can actually do invoke dash command and throw these commands to a different computer name. And let's say OM01. Script block. And then I would put in that same thing that I just ran. So let's just take this.
So what does script block actually mean here?
So script block just means the stuff that I'm going to run. Mm-hmm. So let's actually clear this out and go back up to the last command that I was happy with. Yeah, that's fine. I'm going to enclose this in brackets, so that's what's going to run. And I'm just going to do invoke dash command, computer name OM01, script blocks. Make sure that's right. Invoke command, computer name, script block.
So what this really means is that all those actions that you have taken before, you can actually do this to multiple machines with just additional of the computer names.
That's exactly right.
Command, right.
And in this case, I've got something out of place in there. Let's look for, it's because I'm storing it as the variable. So this is actually those events from a different machine. In this case, we ran it against one machine. You could store as $ list of servers, a list of server names. And then you would say for each. And literally, it's for each is the command. And then tell it to go through invoke dash command. And you can tell it for each of those things, go find it. And export all that stuff to a CSV file and just append it. Or go write it to a list somewhere on a website. Anything you want to do. This is one of those cases. And I guess this is really my point before I show you this module real quick. At a conference like this, we tend to sit down in our chair and look at slides and look for, what does this thing do? What's the list of features on that slide that tells me what this thing does? Once you sit down and start tinkering around with this kind of stuff, if you can get your mind in the place of, these things are engines, right? Everything we're talking about at a big conference like this, these things are engines that do work for us. And so I can actually depart from what's on that slide that's a list of things that thing will do and start to think about, if that's the engine that helps me do work, I've got PowerShell on every single one of these things. I've got PowerShell on my server. I've got PowerShell on my desktop. If I can start thinking about it that way, there's really no limit to what that list is going to be, right? There's no just list of the 10 things that this one thing does. I can make it do whatever I want to do. And it's not that I'm a developer. It's not that I'm going to sit down and spend months trying to figure out how to build a new product or a new feature for that product. I'm just going to tinker around. I'm going to try PowerShell and see what happens. And sooner or later, a project's going to come my way. And I'm going to look like a rock star because I figured out that I could solve that problem even though it wasn't a feature on a slide somewhere. So real quick before I finish up. I got too many of these things. On the wrong machine.
All right, so I'll just hand that over to you.
Yeah, switch me over to the...
Yep, sure.
I don't know your window sequence. That'll work.
There you go.
So we were talking about this in the hands-on lab. What could we show that would really knock people's socks off? And I was talking about all the random PowerShell things that I build. So the problem I was trying to solve, I work from home some days. And my kids were in a room down the hall, and they went off to school and left their cartoons on the TV too loud, and I was working on a project, and I was stuck, and I was doing the double facepalm thing, and the cartoons were playing in the background, and I'm like, oh, I wish that would go away. And I've got the app on my phone that can remotely control my DirecTV box as long as I've got it on my home network. And I was thinking, my phone's in my kitchen, I don't even want to get up, I'm just stuck right now, and I just want to get through this. And it occurred to me, I bet I could solve this problem, I could just grip my way through it. So I sat down and wrote a way to control my DirecTV box with PowerShell. There's a Chef implementation, which is their web service. You can send commands to it. I just statically set the IP addresses on all my DirecTV boxes, and I just pull up my PowerShell window, import my module, send it the IP address, pipe that to send-remote key, power off, and that sound goes away. Problem solved. So stuff like that happens all the time, right? And it's not because I was a developer and sat down and figured it out. It was just a problem that came my way, and I tinkered until I figured out how to do it. The one reason I wanted to show this is if you look at what this is, I figured someday, and by the way, you're the first people to ever see this besides me, that someday I would end up sharing this with somebody else. And when I did, I didn't want to sit down and explain how it worked, right? I just wanted to hand off a module to them, which is just something that you can import and then new commandlets become available, right? So you can basically write your own commandlets. And I wanted to make it something they could just discover on their own, the same way that I did whenever I was going through PowerShell. You can integrate basically building in help when you do this kind of stuff, right? So a module, all a module is a PSM1 file, right? So you wrote the script, you were happy with it, you saved it as a PSM1, later, you can import that, and the modules or the commandlets in that script that you created, which are just functions, and I'll explain what that means, become available to you. A function, all that means is when you figured out that command that you liked and you wanted to make it easier to bring back, You typed function, gave it a name, and put that command in brackets. So if it was get dash event log security, look for this event log number, filter out these different users, return only the last 20, and you don't want to have to type that out every time, call that a function, give it a name, get dash last 20 logons. You just created a function. You've got your own commandlet now that you can pull up in PowerShell. If you want to share it with somebody else on your team, and you don't want to spend an hour explaining how you got there, you can add this kind of stuff, and it's all very well documented on the internet. Add this kind of stuff so that when they do a get dash help, get dash last 20 logons, just like if it came out of the product team for that product, there's your help, and you can provide examples to them and stuff like that. It's very, very easy to do. So that's it for me.
So Michael, go ahead. Could you tell me how you actually taught with the DirecTV, which is, of course, a non-Microsoft Windows or any of the Microsoft solution, right? How did you actually get to talk with those different non-Windows systems here?
In true tinkering fashion, I figured out that there was an app that could do this on my phone. If my phone can talk to it somehow, it must have a web service, so I binged it. Sure enough, there's a web service available, so very similar to what you were talking about with standards-based management. I figured out what the web service was looking for. I actually just binged it and found documentation that was out there already. And in my functions, I'm just creating a URL, basically. And
so
I'm passing the parameters
talking,
in that URL.
Was it talking through a WSMan?
Very, very similar.
Very similar.
Yep.
All right. So you have that protocol, and you have found the way to talk to it. And with the non-Windows system, you just have it talk to it and then create a function, right?
Yep.
Yep.
All right, exactly.
Cool. All right.
Great.
All right. All right. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you very much. Right. I'm going to steal your water.
Right. Yeah, so it was really interesting how I met Michael. He was a proctor in the ILL session that I have been doing, and we've been talking about PowerShell, and I've been talking about the sim commandlets and how we can talk to each other, talk to non-Windows systems, and I was planning to show all this and that, but he actually came up with, within his life, he actually is using PowerShell talk to non-Windows system, and having stretched that idea and having that to show it to you guys, I thought it would be something really interesting for you to see. Right, so moving on, management in Server 2012, that PowerShell thing is pretty much powerful, right? You have actually seen how to do it. But we also have the UI constrained into that application, which is Server Manager. Now, all the functions that you do with Server Manager, you will be able to see that in commandlets, right? So I'm PowerShell. So it's just built up through PowerShell, not the other way around, so that you will have a nice UI to do it. Now, why is this so important? I'm just going to show you the Server Manager. It's really simple. I'm pretty sure that you have tried it out. And if you see here, I can just this is what Server Manager is like in Server 2012, right? And you can just add servers here. This is add roles. Add other server to manage, and here you will see a lot of servers that is on Active Directory, or if it's not even Active Directory, you can actually add that as well. But let's click on some of those servers that I want to manage through. And if I do that, it's going to list out and show you a lot of, this is an expected error, by the way. You can actually get some performance data, events data, and service what's running up and running, and you can actually run a best practice analyzer on top of it. So you would not have to go into that server back in the Server 2008 days and go to the local server manager there and see what's going on. You could actually use that here on a single set of management server here with Windows Server Manager and Windows Server 2012. Now, the good thing about this is later part, I'm going to be talking a little bit about server core mode, right? So the good thing is, in Server 2008 days, when you deploy in server core mode, you cannot transfer that into the full UI mode, right? So you get the sense that server core mode is very powerful and all that. If you know how to use PowerShell, it's going to be really hardening the security surface and area and all that. But it comes to when you have to know all that command list and you have to know how to deploy your Active Directory services in server core mode. And that's going to be something a little bit more challenging than the way that you used to do before, even though we have some good security, surfacing hardening, and patching will be so much reduced. The footprint is going to be reduced. And having all that advantage, you, even though you know that, it's going to be so hard for you to manage. So Server Manager actually comes really handy when it comes to that scenario, where you actually use that UI, you deploy Active Directory or a DNS or whatever services that you run, even IIS, you run that on the UI mode, and then you just tick off the UI mode and have that in, run as server core mode. But how do you manage? The server, that's where Server Manager really comes into play. And you add those kind of different servers, and you will see that appearing on all servers. And you will, if you just click on several other servers that you want to monitor from, it will get you events, and then it will give you the services. It's running, it's, I think it's reading right now. Right, and it's going to run some performance or events data. Hopefully it'll show up. And you can actually run some best practice analyzer within it as well. So if you run some best analyzer, it's going to see what kind of service that is running on top of that server. For example, the SP01, I'm actually running a SharePoint server, that which is Windows Server 2008 or 2. So you can actually do all this capabilities, and we will have this as in a background run through Windows Management Framework. And as I have told you before, Windows Management Framework is down-level support, so you can have that installed on Server 2008 as well as Server 2008 R2. So you will have this capability just not on Server 2012, but also on that, so you will have the results as best practice analyzer, services, or events information from this environment, right? So Server Manager actually gives you a very good view of the server that you're trying to manage, of what services that is running, and whether if that's running a problem or not. And it's going to throw at you that whatever the service that you're trying to manage here, you need to go fix this and that in an event level point of a view. And you can actually have this, let's say, if I go to the local server, and you will actually be able to have this kind of granular view on this remotely on each server that you have actually added here. But you can actually have a threshold on the performance-wise and have that monitored as well. So if you want to have a CPU that gets 30% or more, you can have that as an alert view as an event. So that will pop up for you to look into it. So these are the basic things that Server Manager can provide, but it gives you a really easy way to manage your multiple servers that is running in a very granular view, right? Right. So I just wanted to touch base on the Server Manager here and just go probably into Windows Deployment Services. Now, how many of you have actually used Windows Deployment Services before? All right, awesome. All right. And how many of you guys have tried using that in Config Manager, as in PXE boot? All right, awesome, great. Yeah, so we do have an improvement in Windows Deployment Services. I'm just going to walk you through a little bit of steps that we do. And another thing that I will be showing you is going to be how we internally use that WDOS inside our internal development systems, right? So it's an end-to-end solution for clean installation over the network. So it does use the Pixie boot. And you do have, you can also have the answer file within it, all done by XML. So you can have that image, clean base image, and have the answer file on top of it so that the user would be able to configure that base image to the deployment setting that they want to use, right? So why do you use Windows Deployment Services? It has been around for quite a long time, since 2006, right? So it's a very mature service that we provide, and it can actually scale over like 300 machines. So we have a good article in TechNet that can have the Windows Deployment Services can do actually 300, but I've seen customers that actually work for over more than 1,000 machines at a time. So it's a very powerful thing to use it. The way we provide is we try to provide granular view of planning and managing. So we have some MMC improvements there and Windows Deployment Server infrastructure to customize. We have several other options there as well. And you're going to boot with Pixie, of course. And WDS server is already configured. So before that, on 2008 days, you needed to configure in a certain way to have that launch with the Pixie boot, but it's pretty much configured in, out of the box. And it's going to deploy response with boot programs, and it does support the IPv6, and it also supports the UEFI support, so this is pretty improvement there. And what we do into WinPE is that we have the variable size transmission windows, so we do have a way to talk to the Windows PE Pixie and have that recustomized through that, and we apply the full operating system image in place, Win WIM, multicast apply, and we also do have the VHDX support, right? So we do have that VHDX, have that as an image base and have that deployed. And we do have inject drivers, of course. We have that on the image base. And depending on your hardware, it's going to detect and it's going to apply with the answer files and the XMLs that you have written. And then it's going to boot. So I'm going to quickly show you before I hand it over here. Right. So this is our internal environment, the test machine that I have shown you earlier. And I'm going to create a virtual machine here, a new server. Create it. Okay, if I go down a little bit. All right. So let me just create a new one here, virtual machine. It's going to be a blank machine, right? Right, and then I'm going to connect to the coordinate that we use. And I'm going to select network-based installation, which is going to check for the Pixie installation. And then here I would say, okay. Well, where'd it go? Right. Let me just create a new one. Sorry about that. Let me try it again. Blank. One. All right. External, it's going to be pretty easy. Install, next, and then and finish. All right. Did I click on one? Okay. Right, this is supposed to be happening in server 2. Okay. Oh my God! Thank you. Oh my God! Can I have your name, sir? This has been a hard day for me. I'm not sure why. I've been prepared for this. Right. So this is it. Refresh. How can I forget that? Right, and I hit F12. Here it's going to talk to the Pixie machine that we have set up on a test environment. And these are the images that we have provided. And here we have related with the config manager. And I'm pretty sure that some of you who has been doing Pixie images boot is going to be exactly the same as you should see it here. But this has been integrated with the Server 2012 version of Pixie. And it's going to actually talk to the machine. And what it's going to be doing is it's really going to talk about whether if that's a virtual machine or not, right? So it's going to have that knowledge there and deploy that set of image to this lab environment. That is exactly what this Pixie boot should do. So I'm just going to click run here, and I'm just going to turn back and just show you that it is running, and I'll just show you some other couple of options there to see. While it's running on the background, I'd like to talk to you about the configuration that you can use as a deployment level on Server 2012. As I said, the GUI is an option, right? I don't want to go into too much detail in it. I'm pretty sure that you guys would know what this is all about. So GUI is just a role and a feature that you would see on Server 2012. So whatever that you have deployed, you can just roll it off, and you can actually do that in PowerShell as well. But the interesting thing about this is on minimal server interface, which we call a kind of a hybrid mode, as in core mode and in a full GUI mode. So what it does is, I've shown you the server manager just a couple of minutes ago, right? So that's the only screen that you will see in this minimal server interface mode. So you will just log into the system. It's going to be running basically on server core. You would not have any other UI besides server manager, and you can actually use that as the connection point of using that server core mode. So it's not going to be using any Explorer, or so it's going to be really hardening on the surface on security-wise. And, of course, you will have the server core mode. And most of the application that you would be running on that Windows Server 2012, we recommend you to run that on server core mode unless you want to manage it directly, which is not recommendable anyways. So this is what we do really encourage people should use as server core mode, and these are the specific PowerShell script that you would see here. Just transitioning to server core mode and all that is going to be really simple. And when I hit that here, I'm just going to talk a little bit of back and forth, but this is the Pixie boot that you will see here. So it's going to talk to it, so the result here that you'll be seeing is it had talked to the machine, and it knows that it's in a virtual environment. And then I'll just say this is the MMS demo machine, so I'm just going to run this, right? And then it's just going to go through the environments, talking to that XML file, grabbing it from the answer file, and it's just going to show you, it's just going to let you know what kind of options that we have. So I'm going to run on the task sequence. Now, I'm pretty sure for those people who have been using Config Manager, they would have to have this task sequence. Just briefly talking what task sequence is that it's actually going to install it, and by step, it's going to have this uploaded, I mean installed on top of this images. So it's a pre-configured application deployment, I would say. So if you go down there, I do have a lot of options because I do have a lot of rights to deploy. I'm just going to go here a little bit down here, right, marketing. Go server 2012, it was lab, right. So now what this is going to be doing is going to run the task, domain join and everything. It's just going to do that. But this is actually using the server 2012 and the Windows deployment services integrated together. So this is why I tried to show you. It's going to read the WIM, apply the images. And this is also, you can use this as a VHDX format that I've shown you earlier. So it's going to be pretty much powerful when you also dedicate this use with deduplication feature in Server 2012. When you store this VHDs in a certain library, it will give you about 90% of deduction on the size. So that will be something useful for you to do. So on the deployment-wise, this is the Pixie boot from the Windows Deployment Services, as well as running task sequences and Config Manager is going to be running on top. And I'd just like to show you how the server core mode actually operates here. I'm going to go to a machine. I would just go into not this one. Just going to go a little bit down here. I'm going to log into this server here. Oops. All right. So this server is running on the core mode, right? So it has nothing but a command shell looking like a prompt. I'm going to call out for PowerShell, which actually tells you I am typing a lot of Azure. Right. This is a version 3, so it's running on PowerShell. So this is the server core mode that we encourage you to do. Now, this actually server is running a WSUS server. So if I just click on, just type in get service. Right, so it is using a WSUS service is running on top of, and we have some web service running on top of. So it is on server core mode. So the good thing about this is it really reduces your footprint space and the security surfaces. So you would not need to patch every single time what we have out there for Windows Server 2012. And just having this, I'm just going to install the Windows feature here that is going to transition from, as I've shown earlier, which is going to get you back to the server core mode here, server GUI management. I'm going to copy paste here. I'm just going to cheat sheet here. Server GUI. Infra. Right. So what this is going to do is that it's going to change back into the UI mode, right? So this is a simple thing, but the underlying thing is that from before on Server 2008, you cannot really switch back and forth, and because of it, it does not really share the bottom level of the operating system. It had a different kernel, so it was really bad. And this is actually very powerful if we come to think about the hypervisor level. So if you're using the hypervisor, the host machines, we definitely encourage you to run this in a core mode because you will have other servers to manage through Windows Management Framework, of course, and you will have that manageability built in, so you would not need to have all the UIs on that server itself for hypervisor itself. So this is like switching back and forth. It's a pretty simple thing, so I really wanted to show you that as well. And if you just switch back to any server that has a UI mode, you can see that by removing it, it can actually turn back into a server core mode itself. So after you deployed your hypervisor, probably, and then you want to go to that system, and you can remove the Windows, the UI mode here, which sits right in user interface and infrastructure, right? So you would not, of course, want the desktop experience, but if you want to leave it in a, if you want to have that server manager itself, but you don't want any other graphical instances removed, you can actually do that. If you want totally on server core mode, you can do that as well. But if you just want the server graphical mode, which is the server manager, you can actually do that as well. And if you you can just totally take it out from here. And if you just remove, it's going to remove this whole UI and just leave the services running by itself. So you can actually turn back with a very hardened surface area here, right? So at the end, transitioning the server core mode is very simple, and this is going to be very useful for you to do whenever you have a massive deployment scenarios and stuff like that, and you want to reconfigure and you want to add any application on top of it. You can like switch back and forth on the day on production level. You can actually take that off. So this is something that I wanted to highlight on deploying methodology and the options that you have. Right? So minimal server interface, as I've told you before, is that server manager screen that you will be having. So you will have a list of UI-based manageability there. And local shell capabilities, on the server core mode, it's going to have the PowerShell enabled. So whatever you run, and with the data that you could be handling is all on .NET object base. So you can pretty much do everything that Michael has shown you before. And you can extend that in an automated way. So server core mode is going to be totally manageable through PowerShell. And this is why PowerShell would come very powerful once you get to know. Minimal server interface is that middle layer that have the server manager, but it also does have MMC. What this means is that when you see the PowerShell, you can go to tools and you will see that how to manage the Active Directory users and all that, which is not on server manager by default. You can use it through MMC as well. So whatever you have in MMC, you can actually pull it out in minimal server interface mode and use that as well. And on server with GUI, it's basically what you would use what you had been using from before, the full UI mode. And if you have desktop experiences, it's going to be exactly the same, at least on the interface, as in Windows 8. So that's the shell capabilities that I wanted to share. So you do have a lot of options on deploying your multiple server management, right? The first thing that I have showed you was that it does not only talk with Windows, but it actually can talk with non-Windows. I would be really happy to show you an in-depth of how we can manage with the common information model after this session. So I have all deployed down there, and the machines are there for you to see. So I would really like to show you that. But common information model would be the key thing for us to moving forward to manage non-Windows device and also managing that storages. For example, virtual machine manager, having able to set storage LUNs and all that, that is basically talking through SMIS. And that is because we do embrace that common information model, commandlets underneath allowing that technology would be, that's the thing that you'll be able to do because of that. So embracing standard-based management is moving on forward. This is something that we are really trying to do hard on our future releases. And you can use PowerShell on top of that. So all those goodness that PowerShell brings to you, the IntelliSense and all that in a development point of view, but also on the usages point of view, like scheduled jobs, like background jobs, or any workflows, long workflows that you can use. Those are those things that you can also use in PowerShell on top of the standard-based management. And with multi-management server, you can actually manage multiple servers, whether that is in server core mode or in mini-shell mode or in full GUI mode. We do have that capability. And underlying technology with that is the WinRM, Windows Remote Management. But you do need to have a Windows Management Framework installed, but we do have that down-level capabilities so that you would have Server 2008 and above managed through Server Manager. And you've seen the deployment options. We do have Windows Deployment Services enhanced in Server 2012. We do have that configured with the Config Manager, having it together, having it in task sequence together, and that has been an improvement. So I would really encourage you to try the Windows Deployment Services on, and that will actually give you a lot of enhancement on re-imaging your deployment options there. So having said that, I'd like to close that Server 2012. We really did try a lot of improvements, especially when we are in a new trend in cloud management space. We need to have this multiple machine management capabilities from a single point of view in an automated way with PowerShell and with Server Manager and with underlying a standard-based management and Windows Management Framework. So thank you for being here. I'd like to stick around for more to actually show you, probably deconstruct a little bit of what's been going on around there. And I hope you enjoy your rest of the session. Thank you very much.